Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't a fucking. Ain't a fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind
playing
it, but lower it.
We got straight now?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Nice. Little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah.
John, have I ever mentioned that I really like the sound of this room that we're recording in?
No, you haven't. I'm glad you do.
There's something about, I think that there's just more treatments in this room that keeps my laser-like jackhammer voice from reverberating all over everything and leaking into every microphone within the Tri-City area.
Well, man, maybe there's something to be said for clutter. Legos and toys and everything that was on the table before you got here is now on the buffet.
This week's show brought to you by Sanford and Son Salvage. Sanford and Arms.
Everyone's laughing except my wife.
Don't let the cat out of the bag.
Dang it.
How you doing, brother?
I'm good. Kind of, we're into the 17 and a half basketball and soccer practices a week mode now, so I don't know whether I'm coming or going.
That's what I was going to say, man. You got multiple kids to have to deal with right now.
Yeah, it's never a dull moment, that's for sure.
It will help out significantly when one is old enough and has a vehicle to drive. Double-edged sword.
Oh, man. Let's move on to things that don't give me high blood pressure.
I'm just saying, man, you know, I've got one that's involved in travel hockey, and his commitments to practice dwarf our commitments as far as like the amount of time that's involved in getting back and forth to rinks and whatnot. So
I'm just talking rec league basketball, and it's killing me.
Hey, by the way, I uttered the word practice, and I want to let all the listeners know that John was practicing this morning, so your secret's out, sucker.
Dang it. I was practicing tearing down faster. So there.
I was putting air in my rock and roller tires. Yeah.
It's all part of it.
Hey, man.
Yeah, I had to brush up on a few things, man, you know? I mean, it might be brain practice more than anything, but I had to do it. So
man, that's actually the important stuff.
Exposed.
You know, all the chops in the world don't mean anything, man, if you can't think musically.
That's true.
Use them musically. Train the brain.
More importantly, in another 6 months, we might have something to talk about again. When I practiced that day.
Well, you know, nothing like recycling some topics from time to time.
Help our longevity.
Well, guys, thanks for listening. We appreciate you putting up with the foibles of us getting into these topics and whatnot, but we don't like to do the proverbial cold start. We like to warm up just a little bit. And I want to go ahead and address a topic that was sent to us in an email this week, and it was actually also sent to us in an email a few months ago as well. I actually, either John or myself, we personally respond to all emails, and that doesn't mean that they always get addressed on the show, but since we have received multiple emails in regard to this topic, I want to clarify basically what was in the email and what I meant by something. If you guys recall, I guess it was probably, it's at least 3 or 4 months ago, we did a show, and somehow the topic we got to talking about snare drums and playing brushes, and I said something that I always carry with me in a stick bag is a piece of sandpaper, because the majority of the time, most coated drum heads are either a little too thick with the coating, or you might have some imperfections where you might have just little flecks of coating that might stand up on the drum head, and sometimes they'll get your brushes, your wire strands caught on there. And so I mentioned that what I do on every new coated snare drum head is I will lightly sand the top of the head to remove any imperfections, and also maybe just take a little bit of the coating off. Now, the first email I got, I think the actual question, or the person who wrote the question, got it misconstrued, and they thought I meant sand that sucker down. No, that's
60
not what I'm...
grit.
A little 40
and the next
grit.
Thing they knew, they were like, yeah. They were touching the bottom head of the snare. Wait,
they were like, so now I use a belt sander and what? No, what I mean, guys, is take a piece of fine grit sandpaper, something that would be just around like the finishing grade, like a 220.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, is what I like. And then what I'll do is I will take a full sheet of sandpaper, cut it in half, and then I'll fold it over a few times to where it's basically the size of like a sanding block. Now, don't put it on a sanding block, but I'm just saying use something that the surface area is about the size of your cell phone, and then lightly, lightly, lightly just go over the drum head just to knock any imperfections off and maybe sand down just a little bit of the super thick coating on there. That being said, I do not sand down any of the toms. I don't do any of that. I mean, I occasionally will do some sweeps on the toms and stuff, but it's primarily on the snare drums where all the timekeeping with a lot of the sweeps and swishes are done. So that's where I limit it to. And then the other thing, I know I wanted to mention something else about this. This does not apply to fiber skin heads. No, 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 no. Do not sand that. You will delaminate those heads, and you will have basically like pulp fibers, paper fibers will come up from that. Don't sand a fiber skin head.
That kind of implies people use fiber skin, so, which is weird.
I know some people that do.
Okay.
Yeah. So, there.
I'll shut up now.
There's that. John, let me ask you this real quick.
But that's the problem with fiber skins is eventually there's going to be these wrinkles that are like, you know, where they're getting in the way of your brushes more than that new coating.
What ends up happening a lot of times is when they delaminate and you get the little bubble that comes up, you will eventually puncture it with a wire strand, and then it's game over.
Not too good for that optimum sound you're looking for.
John, I knew there was something I wanted to ask you, and it made me think of it when I said game over, and also when there was something else that
we're going to talk about my career today. That's right. Interesting.
No, I wanted to.
What a segue.
I want to ask you one quick thing. I'm going to give you my two-word answer for this question.
That's what I get?
No, you can expound, but we have to be careful, and you know where this is going in a second, because people are going to lose their minds, and we're going to get nasty emails. But it was fresh on my mind.
I like it already.
They were talking about it on the radio, and then when I first heard about it a couple weeks ago, I was like, no, this is distasteful. All right, here's my take on this, and then I want you to answer this question. If you heard a couple of weeks ago, MLB's doing away with the four-pitch intentional walk, and it's just the manager can come out and just say, take a base. My two-word answer to that is Mark Wohlers. Now, for you guys that don't know what I'm talking about, just go back and look at like an intentional walk from the mid-90s and Mark Wohlers, and you'll see why I incredibly dislike this new rule. And it's not that I am somewhat of a baseball purist. I love baseball. And also, I'll go ahead and say this, I cannot stand the American League. I hate designated hitter. Hate it. Don't like it. It's hard for me to even watch American League
baseball.
Unless
you're managing.
Yeah, well, then I could manage the team then. You know. But all I'm saying is, John, I know you love baseball.
Mm-hmm. It's stupid because a number of things can go wrong.
It speeds up the game. That's
by what, 12 seconds?
I don't want that game sped up. No. Everything else is sped up enough already. That's the one game that you can relax with.
That's true.
Think about things. Think about pitches. Think about infield alignments. Think about blah, blah, blah.
I've seen just tons of times where something goes south in an intentional walk.
I know.
I saw someone get a hit.
I've seen that too.
You know, like the pass ball, because, you know, especially like power pitchers, man, that toss is something they just don't even, that doesn't even compute with them. So things get really hairy with that, you know, and oftentimes it seems to be more with power pitchers for sure, but that's a dumb rule.
I don't like that one, man.
Dumb. It's taking away, you know, base runners, you know, if there's a pass ball, if someone gets a hit, if it's just too many variables that can affect a game to just dismiss it. So that's got to go. Quit overthinking this perfect game.
Yeah. Here I am. I'm being the old guy. Get off my lawn. I don't like interleague play. I don't like, I mean, I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. I totally get it. I mean, National League parks traditionally fill up when you end up having the Yankees come in or the Red Sox come in. Now, maybe not so much like, you know, when like the, well, maybe somewhat with the Royals coming in now, but I mean, traditionally.
The Mariners.
Yeah, you got the Mariners coming in or the Rays. I mean, you know, come on, man.
They ain't showing up for them.
There was something really special, man, about the World Series when you saw those two teams from different leagues playing. I mean, it almost didn't look real, you know, because, I mean, you never saw those teams play each other.
Yeah, let's move on. Johnny Redbird said.
John, I want to get into our topic today by giving a couple examples of what I call beautiful mistakes.
I want to hear it.
Did you have a chance to watch any of that show called the Grammys a couple of weeks ago?
I had a chance.
Well played, sir. Well played. You know what my favorite part of the show was? Adele's.
The end?
Yeah, I heard that they were giving an award away and then it was the wrong person. Oh, wait a minute. No, that was.
That was the other one, yeah. I had a chance to watch. Right.
But what I liked about that show was probably the part of the show that got the most attention and also probably got the most heat, the most disdain. And that was when Adele started that song and was basically in a different key. And then she stopped the song maybe 45 seconds into it and said, hey, we got to start this thing over. I got to get in the right key and sing it. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And I don't mean that in a snarky way. I don't mean that in a Schadenfreude sort of way. I mean that in a real life, this is human sort of way. Because you and I have talked about this on the show before, that so much of what we hear now is this sanitized version of real life music. You know, and it's just, I think it's good for everybody to see that, I mean, this was something that even if there were tracks involved with it, she was actually singing live and was horrendously out of key, you know, when she did it, and then had enough stones to stop the entire thing and go, look, this is wrong. It's my bad. We're going to start the thing over. Started it over. Sounded fine after that. It was great. So that is something, man, that I sincerely appreciate, because I know that you and I have both been in situations where we've played live, sometimes in front of large audiences, where my perfect example, the one that I remember the most, was in front of a crowd of about 2,500 people or so, and this singer had done one of those electronic capo deals and was way out of key. In other words, he set the capo and played it perfectly for the song that he needed the capo on. Then he forgot that capo was like a minor third away, started the next song significantly higher than it should have been, and he just said, ho-ho, we're stopping this thing, guys. And he
might have been the only one in the room that could have sang it where he mistakenly put it too.
Because you know the guy that I'm talking about, yeah. But the best that I recall, he actually got a round of applause from the audience for doing that.
As it should be. I think the Adele thing, other than the kind of, I want to say, let me, what's the best way? The somewhat unreasonable Beyonce fans,
Yeah.
I think other than them, she just endears herself to everyone in that, oh, you know, man, that really sucked. Let's start that over. My bad. It just shows, man, like we live in that world of, it's just so many deceiving BS, you know, fake performers and performances that when someone just kind of owns their shortcomings in a moment, I just think most people are like, oh man, that's amazing. You're human? I love you even more, you know, but I mean, what are you going to do? You can't just muscle through it.
Yeah. I man, it gets on my last nerve when people were like really holding her feet to the fire about that. Yeah, we see what kind of a performer you are. You should have kept going. Well, now, there is something to say about that, especially when there's like just minor mistakes going on. But I mean, man, this was a major, major deal. I mean, I can't imagine that there isn't anybody that didn't know something that off was happening.
Yeah.
So my hat's off to her on that.
There's been some comparisons to that Mariah thing too. And I think that's a little different in that she didn't appear to want to stop and correct and give 100% in that New Year's Eve performance. It kind of became a little circus of, you know, indifference maybe. Mm-hmm. And that's a little different than, you know, if you stop and you're just like, hey, let's get this back on track and then really deliver. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's a tough one, man. It's going to happen. You know, people were, I even felt a little bit for Mariah because clearly that was a technical mistake.
Yeah.
On and some level.
It happens to everybody from time to time.
Sure.
And again, that's a part of the beauty, I think, of going to see live music as well. Is you just, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I mentioned to you before, I saw Van Halen fall apart one time also back in the 80s. And I mean, you know, could have been a little chemical induction, you know, because of that. But, you know, that's, again, part of the excitement of seeing something like that. And I am absolutely more than willing to give leeway for people to take chances if need be to make said mistakes, or even if it's just you're not taking a chance, you just make an honest mistake. Hey, everybody's human, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been accused of playing an occasional 5/4 bar in a 4/4 song. And I emphasize the word accused because I don't agree, but you know, man, it happens.
It's the Vinny roots, man. Those things are coming out.
Oh, God. The only thing Vinny and I have in common is we both used to sit really low.
Oh, man, you chop that throne?
Oh, man. I'm paying for it now.
Speaking of Vinny, have you heard any of that, their new Sting record that came out a couple
months
ago?
No, you mentioned it. I'm behind. I know there's some John Mayer stuff with Jordan, too, and I haven't heard that.
So. Well, I wanted to say something about that new Sting record that also kind of folds nicely into this topic. Real proud of Sting and the production crew on that one. They did not overly Pro Tool that thing. Josh Freese plays on half the tunes and Vinny plays on half the tunes. And there are a few little warts and hairs on there that just make everybody sound human. And I'm all about that. Sting didn't overly Pro Tool his voice or auto-tune his voice. A couple of little sharp flat notes here or there, a couple of rushed drum fills, a couple of weird phrasings and things. Hey, I'm all about that. I think it was my understanding that record was somewhat done a little bit on a whim as well. And so, I'm all about that. Let them get in there and make a couple mistakes when they're trying to figure out these songs. And if it feels good, and let me tell you, it certainly does. Those songs feel good, man, the way they're playing them. I think Sting was trying to maybe also recreate a little bit of that early Police vibe as well.
Uh-huh.
Because this is absolutely the most rocking record he's put out probably since, I don't know, maybe Mercury Falling.
Interesting. So I got to hear it.
Yeah.
I know. I just wish we'd get back to that a little bit more.
Me too.
Our
I like
records
it.
Are just so, they're just so sanitized now. It's weird. A lot of records we really loved growing up that moved us were far from perfect, that's for sure.
Well, I think the thing that stands out about that record is that, about the Sting record, is that there are no glaring mistakes at all. But it's a testament to how much when we listen to sanitized music now, and it's so perfect that when you do hear something that's real, that you can almost instantaneously spot a little something like, oh, wait a minute, what? Did he rush that drum fill?
Heaven forbid.
Yeah. Was Sting a little sharp on that?
No.
What?
The band played flat for a note.
I'm glad you said it.
Those guys are real tricksters.
Dude, I am geeked up on about 3 cups of coffee right now.
All right.
I'm about to fly through this freaking
wall, man.
I'm just
going to go ahead and take a break and let you finish.
I don't know, man.
I'm going on no sleep.
I'm toe up right now, man.
That's
I'm
awesome.
I'm fidgety.
I need to be about 9 o'clock tonight. That's my biggest concern. I'm not sure. I've been known to lay in bed at about 9:30 lately.
I'm telling you.
Just wiped out.
I'm very much the same way these days. I dread these finishing at 1 o'clock in the morning gigs
brutal
these days. So, but anyway, let's get into our topic for the day, John. I want to give the listening audience here the knowledge that you came up with this idea several weeks ago, and you said, man, I want to do a show where it's going to be pseudo self-reflective. And you said, I want to take some time before we do it and kind of flesh out the ideas and talk about some stuff. So this show is a John show. I mean, I'm gonna certainly add my 2 cents in, but I'm gonna let John take the stick on this one today. So tell the folks, man, where you're coming from on this topic.
Well, it kind of comes from just my current state. And that is, playing has been a little bit of a struggle, nothing major, but, you know, things just don't feel as effortless and that as of late. I think some of that has to do with not playing as much, which kind of is part of this whole thing. And some of it's just on a physical level, too, health and, you know, we've talked in the past about my lack of commitment to technique, and I think there's some connection to that by way of playing being a little more laborious than it has been in the past. You know, just kind of that your body's kind of feeling the effects of abuse and just indifference in that. So it sort of came to me like, man, I'm in a place right now in my career where I'm not playing as much, I'm not getting called as much, and it doesn't feel good to say that by any stretch, but it's true. And I kind of feel like I'm man enough to just be vulnerable with it and say, hey, man, let me share with you some mistakes I've made that I think it put me in this position on some level. And maybe some people can avoid that or just realize, you know, this is a possibility that you could be here later in life if you're not careful.
Let me step back and ask you a question here about when we're talking about your health. Now, I know you very, very well, so I know this. But what do you attribute some of your health challenges to?
Well, I have one that I don't know if you can attribute to much. I'm AFib, so it's some heart issues, which sometimes just happens, you know? I mean, it could be hereditary on some level. Sometimes it just comes out. Your heart just kind of jacks its signals up, and one valve thinks it's a boss, and the others say, no, you're not, and blah, blah, blah. But that's been difficult. For sure. Kind of in a good place right now with it. So that's nice. But, you know, at the same time, man, I had a metabolism that was on the moon for almost 40 years, too. You know, like I could turn sideways if I wanted to avoid you and you wouldn't see me.
Yeah.
You know, and then that'll catch up with you, too. You know, about right around 40, I didn't change my eating habits a lot, just kind of indifferent to that. And, you know, it's definitely taken its toll a little bit. Nothing major, but, you know, I could probably stand to lose a little weight. And exercise a little more. Even with this heart thing, I should be doing more of that. But it is what it is. I do have a lot of stress in my life right now, so it's sort of that kind of can overtake your rational side and all that. So with that, you know, there you go. I have some stress in my life, and it's compounded by the fact that I'm not working as much and I'm not feeling as comfortable behind the drums too. So it's sort of like a vicious circle in a way too. So, you know, we can get into some things that I think kind of brought me to this place.
Yeah.
And I hope that everyone sort of just takes it as, you know, man, I appreciate that versus like, yeah, you loser, you're not doing this. We kind of have a bad habit of that sometimes. And well, other people struggle, you know, we can kick them when they're down and all that, man. You got to do that. That's cool. But I want to help people to not get caught up in some of this.
Well, and I think something that's important for listeners that are hearing this for the first time, and they're thinking, oh, well, these reasons that they're going to start talking about here, are they're not going to apply to me. I'm young and hungry. Let me tell you, when we were putting this show together and throwing ideas back and forth, you can insert the name of famous drummers into a lot of this, a lot of these problems and a lot of these scenarios. And it absolutely is applicable to them. I mean, there are guys that you used to hear about and read about in magazines for years that have just, for the lack of a better term, disappeared. Mm-hmm. And some of these reasons that we're going to talk about today are their reasons as well. So don't think that it can happen. As Art Blakey used to say, if you are not appearing, you are disappearing.
Yeah, that's great. That is sound wisdom. I think the one thing I noticed more than anything with drummers is oftentimes they're the first ones to kind of fall off the face of the earth for the simple reason that it's really physical. Mm-hmm. And man, you're talking about, you know, your physical deterioration, which is inevitable, you know, with the exception of Roy Haynes and Steve Gadd, maybe, you know, like they were given a gift of, you know, just being able to play at a high level and physically accomplish what they want to do for a long time. Most guys, if you notice, like a lot, have you ever noticed a lot of sound men or drummers that were drummers? Mm-hmm. I think there's two things to that. One is some of them just weren't good enough to continue. You know, you get to a level and you're talking about making a living, just maybe they just didn't have it together. You know, they just weren't all together that good, so they focused on other things. Now, that doesn't say that there's not some really good drummers who do sound. I know some that are fantastic drummers. They just like that, and they are drawn to that, and it fills their schedule out in a lot of ways. It made them more valuable in a broader sense. But just when you talk about, you know, a lot of guys, let's just say 50. Let's just use the age of 50. I would venture to guess more professional drummers are falling out of a regular working scenario than most instruments. Just because, I mean, just the simple fact of having to bring everything, that in itself is a drag. But physically, man, we're beating ourselves up probably more than anyone else when you're talking about the issues of repetitive, you know, things like our hands and wrists and knees and ankles and feet. And, you know, we're doing everything we do is what a sane doctor of sound mind would say, don't do to your body. Lifting at 2 a.m. when you're tired, you know, all these things. So, man, you know, the kind of just by default, we're going to have some drummers fallen by the wayside just from that sheer physical challenge. But it goes deeper than that with me, and that's where I want to get into some stuff.
Man, the first thing on the outline that I think virtually every drummer with good gigs gets into a habit with for a variety of reasons is that it's very easy to get comfortable when you've got a steady gig. Mm-hmm. And you continue to get paid well, you get pretty good treatment you know, when you're with this artist, and you know, you reflect, you directly compare back to gigs where you weren't getting paid well, and when you weren't getting good treatment, and it's kind of like, man, I can sit on this gig for as long as they need me. Because I think another aspect to that thing about drummers getting comfortable is that there's something about us as drummers that's a little bit unique as compared to, say, like horn players or vocalists. Whereas, not to toot our own horn, but once we get into a playing situation, we are absolutely vital and critical from the standpoint of counting tunes off, playing the right tempos, playing the right forms, knowing the forms of those songs, playing the right feels. People get super comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard on bands to sub out drummers. And so when you get into that comfortable thing of like, hey, man, I'm really comfortable inside this gig. The treatment is good. The pay is good. You heard the old saying before, fat cat won't hunt.
Man, I am the fattest of cats when it comes to that. When I first moved here, I mean, prior to moving here, I worked a lot all the time, played wherever, whenever. You know, single, young, just like, yeah, man, hey, I'm there. I don't care how much it pays. Let's do this, or, you know, whatever. You know, I played every chance I could get. And when I moved down here, I worked quite a bit, you know, slugging out in the clubs. And I don't regret that at all. I miss it on some level because it was with some amazing players. But I got real comfortable with a couple gigs that paid really good. And in my mind, justified saying no to the $100 gig on Thursday, you know, in a bar. Or, I don't need to do that. I'd rather not. I'm not feeling that. Or I don't want to learn 15 songs and all this stuff. And fortunately and unfortunately, they were really long-running gigs. As a matter of fact, I'm still doing them both. But it, in a way, as great as that is, I'm sort of suffering at the hand of it now, in that my regular, steady corporate gig, we're working a little less. Well, for the last 15 years, I've been kind of like, no, I'm not interested, turning people down. Eventually, they're just going to say, well, I'm not going to call him. He never says yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of paying for that in some levels. And would I be that excited about playing a few more nights a week in a bar? Probably not, but I'd do it. I need to do it. I'd like to do it. And I went through this phase where I got kind of insecure about doing it because I was so comfortable in my gigs that the challenge of winging it or learning a bunch of songs just sort of was not attractive. So there's some, that kind of frames out in a very long-winded way what we're getting at with that. And I think it's best to avoid that on some levels.
I completely agree that there needs to be a happy medium in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it has to come with, you have to draw a few parameters out there still, even with wanting to do more gigs. But I don't see anything wrong with trying to find, I like to call them the glue gigs, these little gigs that are in the middle of the week. You know, sure, you might only make $100 or $150, you know, to go play at a club somewhere. But if you really think about it, a lot of times the way you ended up getting the comfortable gig was through doing something like that where somebody heard you and said, hey, I think that John would be perfect to do this gig. And then eventually you end up getting
a better gig. That's like that. You're so right.
You kind of have to rationalize some of this stuff that, you know, you do these things from time to time that put you out of your comfort zone, but you never know, in a roundabout way, it could turn it back around and put you in a different comfort zone,
mm-hmm,
over a period of time.
Yeah. I have this irrational fear of, and I think it was born out of not doing one-off gigs, mm-hmm, for years, where I'm just like, oh man, I'm just going to go and I'm going to suck. My whole brain is not wired that way anymore. And there's guys that do it all the time and do it well. And I think that's part of it. Those gigs are a little more daunting to me now, in that I just, you know, I'm not used to just putting my big ears on and going in and winging it. And so it's a drag. I beat myself up if I go do a gig like that.
I think most people are creatures of habit and routine.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get a good gig and we play them for a long time and we get comfortable inside of them, it's really hard, man, to come out of that and put yourself intentionally into what could be a stressful situation.
Right.
And, you know, you put yourself up to ridicule. You put yourself up to also probably a fairly good amount of work, you know, to so you don't have to have as much stress going into the gig.
Right.
But, again, it's one of those things that if you do put that work in, a lot of times it's like going to the gym. The thought of doing it and the original gumption to get up and go do it is completely and totally just vanquished after you do the gig, and there's that feeling of high of like, hey man, I made it through. I did something that was actually good for me.
That's a great insight. And I think as creatives especially, we're guilty of not embracing that post-gig mm-hmm. euphoria for any period of time. You're just immediately back into the self-doubt and, you know, laziness and whatever it may be that's keeping you from doing, you know, taking those gigs and all that. It look, man, we could wear that out, but my point in all of this is make every effort, regardless of how comfortable you are. If you got a nice road gig, if you got, you know, a nice corporate gig, I got a nice church gig, you know, these things. Make every effort to kind of stay in the scene and to stay available, even if it's, well, if you're making really good money, well, doing a $50 gig isn't that big of a deal, is it? You might enjoy it. You might play some music you really like. You know, look at the positives of that as opposed to like $50, $75, $100, man, what a joke. You know, be like, man, I'm blessed to play and get paid really well this mm-hmm. weekend. So I'm going to go do this, you know. Now, granted, if it, you know, like in my case, to do a $50 gig, it can get a little, I can get upside down pretty quick. I might have to pay for someone to watch the kids
yeah.
and all that. So you can't be unrealistic about it. But if you're in the position to take some of these gigs, I think it's better to say yes than no.
Yeah.
And herein lies another issue when I'm talking about that, the kids and the cost and all that. You know, I kind of, looking back, I think I kind of made a mistake in that I moved really far out of town. And at the time, it sounded great. And
you don't say, John.
Yeah.
You
I do say. You, no, you know.
No kidding.
We joke I live in South Carolina because I almost do. But, and, you know, it works well for my wife. It actually, I think it was just kind of God had his hand on us because we ended up, for my son, in the perfect situation for his school. And that probably wouldn't have happened had I been sort of adamant about staying close to town and how my career would benefit from that. But nonetheless, man, if you have the opportunity and it makes sense for you in whatever situation you're in with your life to stay closer to the epicenter of your scene,
mm-hmm.
I highly recommend doing that. Because now, if, you know, I get called for a cool little jazz gig in town that doesn't pay much, I'm 40 minutes, you know, from that. And that's with no traffic mm-hmm. and all that. So it's something to think about, you know. I mean, right now, you might be like, oh, what difference does it make? It makes a difference.
Let me tell you, you're being generous when you say also 40 minutes. You're 40 minutes without traffic.
Right.
Is what it is.
And we're in
yeah.
little L.A. now.
Right. And so, I mean, if you're having to deal with any kind of traffic with rush hour, you could easily double that. You could be an hour and a half.
Easily.
You know, away yeah. from that type thing. So, yeah, you made a good point, man. It's like we are very much like in little L.A. And for those out there on the West Coast, wouldn't an equivalent be like for example, if you were in LA, like living maybe in Irvine or something, might be where you would be, and then you have to have playing gigs in Hollywood.
Brutal.
It's probably similar. It's very similar to that. That's what it would be.
Yeah, it is completely unpredictable on every level, and we still have this optimistic view of departure time, which I've tried to sort of skew to the safer side of things, but it's something to think about, guys. And when you know, I can get so much more house, or I can get, you know, this or that. There's a lot of reasons people do it. I'm sick of this rat race in town, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of have sort of an in-town career in a lot of ways. So, you know, we live far from the airport. If I were on a road gig, you know, where there's a lot of flying, that in itself would be brutal and a lot of stress just getting to the airport.
Man, I am very, very fortunate that I've been stuck where I am for the last few years, man. I'm 15 to 20 minutes from the airport, and from the Buckhead downtown area, also 15 to 20 minutes. That's still doesn't help me out a lot of times getting the motivation to get out there to go to jam sessions and whatnot, but at least I can say I'm a little bit closer.
Yeah, whatever. Here's another thing that I think about when we talked about, you know, if your health is affecting your playing or this and that. Another thing that I thought about was when I was doing a lot more sessions, I ended up, I was really aware of my shortcomings. You know, we all have our strengths, and we certainly enjoy those. But there was a significant period of time where I was like, man, you know, I need to get this together. I need to have this more together, because I was getting a lot of calls, you know, we're doing a lot of work. And just kind of kept putting it off, like laziness, you know, or insecurity, like, oh, if I get into that and I just don't get it together, I'm going to be tripping, you know. But I can remember things like, just simple things, like there was a tempo range that I just didn't click with well, you know, no pun intended. You know, that 80-ish range was haunting me, and does a lot of people from what I've talked to. That it's... is it a ballad? Is it not? You know, all these things. And I knew, I need to have this a little more together. And I didn't spend time doing it.
That, man, that's that weird tempo where it's equally comfortable or equally daunting to play either eighths or sixteenths.
Yeah.
You know, for the subdivision.
That threshold for everyone's a little different, too.
It's right in there, yeah.
Yeah, that gets a little funky for sure. I mean, granted, for me, 80 and 16th notes don't, that's not, we don't even have to discuss it. So I'm lucky in that sense. But man, I mean, there's another example of, could I have prolonged my, you know, session career a little bit more? I don't know. I mean, in some ways, I think I got called because I wasn't perfect in that little trend was popular for a while, like looser and this and that. But there's also some of the, you know, look, I might have done 10 sessions for a producer and killed on 99% of it, but there was this one tune where my technique or my headspace or my lack of knowledge in a certain style didn't pan out, and that might be what they remember.
Well, I understand that. And, you know, we've all heard those crazy stories about, you know, all these wonderful sessions that happened, and then all of a sudden somebody had a bad session or a bad gig, and that's the only thing anybody talks about.
Mm-hmm.
I almost tend to think that a lot of times the person that made the mistake makes way more out of it.
Oh.
I'm the
poster child for
right.
that.
And that kind of steps back to what you were talking about before, about, you know, feeling good after a gig that you maybe really didn't want to do or had some anxiety going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it again right now that I feel like it would behoove everyone if we took a little more time to maximize the positive events in life. Now, I'm not saying hang on to them, right? but maximize them. Make a little more out of them other than the few minutes of gratification or the few minutes of joy that you get out of them. Maximize them just a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And then when you do have the negative experience, really try to get past those things and not hang on to them. I know it absolutely goes against human nature. But I think if we learn that practice a little bit more, it will make everybody a little bit more happier and certainly more confident, because you know as well as I do, a drummer without confidence, man, is not worth 50 cents.
I'm going to have to go lay down. Okay.
I'll have somebody bring you a nice warm bowl of soup, John.
Why are we continually hammering my value? Your subtle little digs at me, man.
Some would say not.
You know,
so
there
subtle,
was a time when, however, 25 cents was a significant amount of money.
I call it 2 bits.
2 bits. If I were worth 2 bits in 1897. And look, all joking aside, man, there are certain, there's some, you know, look, that my nice paying gigs. Okay. I beat myself up for kind of taking it for granted and being a little lazy, right? On the flip side, one thing that was awesome about that is it allowed me to raise my son without having to do daycare. Financially, that's a challenge. But more importantly, my wife and I's schedules gelled so well, and my being able to make a pretty decent amount of money in a short amount of time allowed for us to be there for him the entire time he was in his formative years, and, you know, pre-school and all that. We were really lucky in that sense, and largely based on the fact I had a couple nice paying gigs where Saturday night and Sunday morning I make a nice chunk of change, and I can dedicate my week to him. Now, we could, if an opportunity comes up, we had a backup plan, we had a babysitter, we had this and that. But for the most part, a lot of people would kill to be able to have one parent or the other or both taking care of their kid at all times. That's a real blessing. So that's not lost on me. I'm suffering right now, you know, like not getting as many calls and what have you. And that can mess with your self worth and confidence, mm-hmm, and all that. You know, it's hard to, you know, now, I mean, I'm coming into this period with social media being so prevalent too. So you just see who's working. Yeah. You know, you got a Friday night off and you see 8 people bragging about their gigs, and human nature is to be like, God, I suck, man. What have I done? You know, so you got to keep some things in perspective too. You know, I mean, I would have been blissfully ignorant 20 years ago that everyone else was working on a Friday night.
Well, that point is going to lead me into a little bullet list of some things that I want to say about. Okay. I made just a little quick list. They don't need a whole lot of explanation, simply because it's going to be pretty much right on the nose. Everybody's going to know exactly what I'm talking about when I say it. And these are things that I know that I am guilty of that detract away from some of the things that we've talked about here also.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, and this is the big one for me, and it's exactly what you said. It's like a technology distraction, whether it be social media, whether it just be the internet in general. Man, for me, that is my time vampire. Now, do I get things done with it? Yeah, oh, absolutely I do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's wasted time in there. No questions asked.
Hours.
No questions asked. That there's wasted time in there. The other thing is this, man, and you could lump this in there, but general procrastination, just generalized procrastination, whether it is doing something like wasting time on the internet, or if you're doing any other kind of just mind-numbing, menial task to avoid doing things that are outside of your comfort zone.
Oh,
there's another one.
I am the king of, like, putting off learning tunes.
Yeah.
And then just create this stress at 0 hour. It's right. Like stupid. Yeah. Why do I do that?
I don't know, but I think that's something that everybody has a tendency to do from time to time. Mm-hmm. Another one is just fear of taking chances.
No, we are just going to continue to beat me up, aren't we?
Well, you know, I'm just saying that that's something that I think, again, when you get into that fat cat don't hunt,
yeah,
you get into the fear of just taking chances on stuff. I mean, you get into the thing of what if, and again, it's unfounded virtually every single time. You know, you're projecting some sort of future calamity on a situation that's really innocuous, you know?
Well, I mean, a perfect example is like the probably premier straight ahead jazz jam in town. You know, a friend of mine plays, he's like, hey, come play. And I'm like, I avoid it like the plague. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, another friend of mine runs it. And it's sort of like, why do I not want to go do that? You know, and it's insecurity and nothing but. I'm not worried about my two friends and what they think. I'm so locked into like, oh, all these people who don't know me. They don't know what I do. They don't know what my strengths are. They're going to hear me play that and it's going to be lame. And they're just going to have me figured out. That's what goes through my head. That's stupid.
Yeah. But it's common.
Yeah. And you know, I sometimes I can't get past it. And then I'll justify it like, I'm not going to drive 40 minutes to go to a jam session.
I'll say this, and this, we could do an entire four part miniseries on this, but the only way that I've been able to successfully battle these anxious moments in me being king boy of anxiety, on most days you can find me shuddering in a corner. The only way that I get out of that stuff is any type of anxious moment that I have, man, I have to go head first into it. I mean, just head first into it and prepare myself, but then allow the chips to fall where they may. It's been my experience that the more that I try to prearrange my destination, try to prearrange your future, the worse it gets, man. You just have to prepare yourself and then allow things to happen. And again, 99% of the time, it works out for the best.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Another thing, man, that I think myself, I'm better about this than I used to be, but it's very easy to deceive yourself, not be honest with the real intentions of what you're feeling. And some people will even extend that to the point to where they end up blaming others for, you know, feeling bad or feeling anxious about a situation, or maybe just blame other folks for the situation that you're currently in that won't allow you to do the things that you feel like you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, once again, being honest with yourself, really sitting down and thinking about the situation that's at hand, and realizing that virtually everybody is in a situation that they've made a choice,
right,
that have led themselves into that. If you can at least be honest with yourself about it and then realize that it's your choices that have gotten you to a certain place, you're better off than 2/3 of most other people. At least if you know that you're in a certain situation of your own choice, you can get yourself out of it significantly easier than sitting there and pointing the finger at other people or other situations that might have gotten you in that place.
Amen. Hey, before we kind of get away from this pitfalls, for lack of better terms, one that I think is far too common is the obsession of gear. And, you know, I'm a complete gearhead, and I'm guilty of obsessing on it, but I'm also, I can be a real enabler of that because I buy and sell a lot. But man, there's just too many people getting too wrapped up in this chasing the trends, and I got to have this to look cool and this and that and all that, man. Figure out what it is that's your thing and just dig in on it, man, and concentrate more on playing and, you know, networking and all these things. But too many of us are too wrapped up in this, and it takes just insane amounts of time, money, energy, you know, placating the insecurity that is like, my kit's not good enough, my cymbals aren't big enough, all that stuff, man. Come on. Let's all make it a pact to kind of get past that.
There is nothing that will feed that dopamine drip like that new piece of gear, but it is temporary. Always. It's always temporary. That new crash, that new snare, even that new set of heads is not going to revolutionize your playing.
No, it's not. The only thing that's going to do that is your head in the right place and putting in the time and putting in the effort, working on your shortcomings. Gear is awesome. I love it. I can't get enough of it. But man,
most people do.
Been a huge distraction. You know, sometimes financially, I put myself in a hole, thinking I need this or that and all that stuff. But just, I think if we all kind of, like you said, most people do it. Let's all readily admit that, and maybe kind of rethink our attitude about it. Have the tools for the gigs you're doing. Don't be tripping on trends, man, because they're just that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, find out what works for you. If you like hanging floor toms, that's okay. If you like mounting the bass drum off your, or mounting the tom off your bass drum, that's okay. If you like, by today's standards, a little bit smaller crashes and that's your thing, that's okay. Do your thing, baby.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said also to try to love what you have, you know, not what you don't have.
Yeah.
You know,
man, that could carry over into many aspects of life.
New gear is wonderful. It really is. And it can sometimes be just a spark to get you, you know, maybe reinvigorated. But what we're really talking about here is there are a lot of folks out there that feel like that gear is the thing that's going to make them. And that's not the case.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really, I mean, unless the only kit you have is a 24, 14, 18, and you're wanting to play bebop gigs, you might want to obsess on your gear a little and make some changes. But other than that, we need to reel it in, fellas. Let's all, you know, encourage ourselves to spend as much time improving as we do accumulating stuff.
Yeah.
Being influenced by the popular opinion of the day. So that's cool, man. A couple of things I'd like to revisit if we have the time.
Yeah.
You know, attitude, man, that can really help put you in a pickle with your career. If your reputation is you're a hothead or you're lazy or you've got, you know, social shortcomings, try to be honest with yourself and try to keep that in check, because it's going to continue to negatively affect you, your workload, if you just bury your head in the sand about some of this stuff. Ask some friends, tell them to be honest. You know, what is it? Why am I not working as much? Or what's keeping me from working more? What's keeping me from the gig that I want to do? Well, it might be your big mouth. Yeah. It might be your negative attitude, you know, and this and that. And it can really come into, play, man. Like, I mean, look, I've been fired from a couple gigs and it wrecked me. And, you know, there's some people like, I've never been fired from a gig, whatever, man. I ain't worried about you, bro. I want to talk to some people who have been or might be, because of their BS, you know, You have a lot of control over avoiding that.
Mm-hmm.
In my cases, it was, I was in a band with some close friends and I didn't like the direction it was going. Instead of saying, hey man, I'm not crazy about this direction, you guys want to talk about it, I just became a dick, you know? Just belligerent and snarky, yeah. And you know, I'm gonna drink some and tell you how you're stupid and whatever. Well, eventually it was like, man, we don't want to deal with that. I learned a hard lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But take it from me, man, if you're in a situation and you're not crazy about what's happening in it, it's better to effectively communicate than self-destruct. And then there's the other part of it too. I lost a gig just quite frankly because I was socially immature.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And man, you mm-hmm. know, you're mm-hmm. out on the road especially and you're just being a jackass. No matter how good you play. Because I was killing that gig, I think.
Yeah.
And I rarely say I was killing a gig. But I kind of feel like I really was playing well. And I jacked it up by being a loudmouth dumbass.
I'll say this. The majority of the time when I've been in groups where people were let go, it was almost never for the performance.
No.
I mean, occasionally it has been, but the vast majority has been from just social issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it be social issues as far as like just not being able to get along with people or social issues from the standpoint of just being irresponsible.
Right. And those things long term, mm-hmm. if you don't get a handle on them, are going to affect you.
Part of that honesty thing, being honest with yourself.
You got to be, man. It's, I mean, and that goes beyond just social too, like playing, you know. You've got to mature as a player
mm-hmm.
or opportunities are going to be.
Do you know something that Scott Meter said when we did one of our interviews, that this might be one of the things that stuck with me the most? And because I've had to use this example a few times since we did that interview. Do you remember he was talking about playing CCM music, Christian contemporary music,
mm-hmm.
and was talking about in particular that there were a lot of good young players that's all that they played was that.
Mm-hmm.
Respectable. I can respect that. However, he made it a point during our interview to say, guys, you've got to get your heads out of this and listen to some other things. It's going to vastly improve the music that you love playing, and it's going to give you overall a lot deeper set of musical roots to pull from, because you can bet the people who wrote this music and who are performing it didn't just listen to Sandy Patty.
No.
Petra, you know?
Pretty sure not.
Yeah. So, I mean,
clearly they listened to U2 and Coldplay.
You don't say. You know, the pedal boards alone from the guitars will show you that, right? But, man.
The size of my dining room table.
Yeah. I'm telling you, that whole thing of musical maturity and depth in your playing that's a great point, man. Excellent.
Yeah, most people don't want to hear your latest chops and your all this, man. Take the gig for what it is, give 110% and just nail it for what it requires, you know? Like, you're going to pay. If you want to work, you're going to pay if you don't get out of that mindset. Like, man, I got to do what I got to do. I got to express myself, blah, blah, blah. That's all well and good, man. Find that vehicle. Even if it's one of your gigs,
mm-hmm.
have that outlet so you can let go of that when needed to be something other than that.
Absolutely.
It's all good, man. You can do it. You can do it.
Well said. John, I love today's show.
Yeah, man.
It could be that I am 3 cups of coffee in this and I'm tap dancing on this table, but I thought it was brilliant, man. I appreciate the topic.
Well, if you'd allow me to cap off just a couple little things.
Cap it.
You know, man, look, what we do, it kind of oftentimes requires some selfishness. And a lot of people along the way are going to be affected by that, you know, girlfriends, wives, children. One thing I'd encourage you to do, man, pick and choose your battles and don't lose sight of things that are important. You know, your sister's wedding or your, you know, grandmother's funeral, man. A lot of times people just like, man, I got to work. I got a gig. I can't. You know what, man? doing about face with that. Know when it's important to say no, and know when it's important to honor things other than your career and your gigs, and you're not going to suffer for it, I promise you. Just, we all are too tunnel vision too many times when it comes to things that matter.
John, you could point that back at fear too, man, because
true.
I mean, a lot of guys are like, man, if I don't do this gig, I'm never going to get a call for
that's
it.
That's a great point.
And that's a fear-based thing.
Yeah, you be careful with that, man. And I think I can speak from experience at this point, you know, man. I kind of wrote down, like, appreciate the gift you've been given, and make wise choices to have a fulfilling life. It goes back to some of that, mm-hmm. you know, but, you know, taking gigs that are going to benefit you and your goals. Don't get distracted with some stuff, you know, that isn't, but don't also make it such a priority that you're losing sight of what life is really about, which is relationships. And, you know, that's far more fulfilling than that Saturday night gig that you're worried about. It's going to slow down, man. Younger, better, faster. It's all coming for you. So keep that in mind when it comes to these decisions, you know, like your family, your kids, your loved ones, your friends. Sometimes later in life, man, those things you're going to realize they're more important. And you could negatively affect those relationships by making some boneheaded decisions and selfish decisions. So be thinking about that. I think it's important, man. We're all guilty of losing sight of that sometimes.
Rosenblatt made a great point of that toward the end of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
He really echoed that.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm echoing that. But I've been saying it forever, learning the hard way. I've missed some things in my life that I regret.
Yeah.
Don't do it, man.
Excellent.
Yeah. So there you go. I say vulnerable. I mean, definitely, man. Look, it's a struggle. You know, sometimes it's going to be hard, and sometimes work's going to slow down. Hopefully we can help you to avoid some of that. Some of it is inevitable, too.
Right.
Don't beat yourself up too bad if you're not working five nights a week like you used to. It's kind of, life sort of works like that sometimes, oftentimes.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, dude.
Bro, thanks for the topic this week.
I hope everyone appreciates it. And if you're not reveling in my mistakes, hopefully you'll learn from them.
I'm going to title this episode Listener Schadenfreude.
No, you're not.
So we're going to finish off today. We're going to do our little segment of a great underappreciated drum track. And we feel like we got a couple good ones for you today. And we're going to break some new ground this week, John. We're going to do our first country drum track.
Some might say our first two.
You know what? Good point.
Yeah.
I'm going to go first with mine today. The first track, or my track that I'm going to go with today, is one that I recently reheard, I guess it was a few weeks ago, and was just blown away at how good it feels. And it's a feel that, quite honestly, we almost never hear these days. And that's a shuffle. And it's a Western swing, country swing, Western swing, and it's from Dwight Yoakam's first album, Guitars and Cadillacs, etc., etc., etc. And it's the title track, Guitars and Cadillacs, and it is the drummer Jeff Donovan who's playing on it. It is just a brilliantly funky, loopy, lopey shuffle all the way. Fast. It's a faster shuffle also. And it's straight out of that Buck Owens Western swing feel. And there's something about the way that he plays this groove. He plays it in between cymbal and hi-hats, doing a lot of the double-handed shuffle type thing, that Western Texas, California kind of Bakersfield-styled shuffle. And, man, it has just got a great little lope to it. And he also plays what I call perfectly timed, tasteful fills. Because when we think of that kind of up-tempo shuffle like that, a lot of times we think in terms of just doing like a lot of triplets, but he'll do those open triplets where the middle beat out of the triplet is missing. And virtually everybody, myself included, when we end up playing that, we want to rush those things, you know? And he just perfectly, tastefully plays those fills throughout the song. And he's got just great ensemble kicks that he hits throughout the entire song. So if you haven't heard that song, or if you haven't heard it in a long time, go back and revisit Guitars and Cadillacs. Dwight Yoakam, from his first record back in the, I think it's the mid-80s, like 86, 85, 86.
It's deceivingly, that his career is longer than we kind of maybe think. 86 sounds right.
Yeah, and if you don't think that's a tough groove to play and hold and make it feel right, just sit down and play with it. Record yourself playing that feel for 3.5 minutes and see if you can make it feel like this guy. Brilliant.
Good stuff, man. I remember that record was kind of, I sort of opened my ears to a little more modern country because it was steeped in tradition for sure and roots and all that, which Dwight is. But
plus, he played Doyle Hargraves in Sling Blade.
Incredible. For a non-actor, you got to figure he pulled from experience on that one, you know, because you don't pull out that performance just cold, like, okay, be an English professor from Oxford now, go, you know. No, I think he knew that guy.
My response to that, John, is a man without vices is an untrustworthy man.
That might be true. Anyway.
Do your pick.
I mentioned there might be two country choices today, but arguably not country in the traditional sense. But my track today comes from a Lyle Lovett record called Joshua Judges Ruth, and it's the first song on the record called Church by the fabulous and well-documented Russ Kunkel.
Mm.
This track has got, it's kind of this funky little shuffly tune that groove that it's got a little of New Orleansy underpinnings. And I remember the recording, the drums are real dry, so you hear every little subtlety and all that, but it's just got this lopey, funky kind of swampy thing about it. And then you put it on top of Lyle's, or underneath Lyle's wit and, you know, just well thought out thing. It's a magic track in that sense. That whole record's got some of that, but this one in particular, I really encourage you to check it out if you haven't heard it. Russ just kind of showing some depth and experience and seasoning in his approach to this particular groove, man. It's really cool. And you know, he's one of those guys, man, you hear all the stuff he's done, you go back and you realize how perfect it is for the songs, you know, the James Taylor stuff, and it's like, whoa.
I remember as a kid seeing Russ Kunkel play behind Linda Ronstadt.
Mm-hmm.
That was a popular genre when I was a youngster, and aside from what you were talking about and everybody knowing Russ as being, he's one of the great West Coast studio guys, man.
Song drummer.
Plays for the song. There's two things, man, that I also think of when I think of Russ Kunkel. I think of Brushes Like Sticks.
Yep.
You know, with the James Taylor stuff.
Fire and Rain.
And I think of Rocky Horror Hairdo.
Dang, sorry, dude. Man, I thought we were framing you in all the respectful light.
Hey, we do it in good fun.
Yeah, he kind of wised up and got rid of all that. So,
hey man, I'm heading down that road. I don't know about the Rocky Horror part, but you know,
I'm not gonna let you do that.
Good one, John. Love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, man.
Anything else you want to say to these folks before we wrap this up, put a button on it, coda it, put a stinger on it?
I think the only thing I'll say is, man, if you're struggling, you're in a dark place about opportunities and gigs and all that, you're not alone. Do what you can to get out of it. But, man, you're not alone. Just hang in there. Do what you got to do and go out and reconnect.
You're inspiring me, bro.
Well, I'm not going to do it. I'm just saying someone else.
Somebody's going to do it,
I don't have time
right?
to do it. I got to take care of
me and Russ Kunkel, man.
Children's
gonna,
and stuff.
Going to get in the car and go scope out some jam sessions.
I like it. You both can move to, like, you know, like Indianapolis and take over.
Oh, yeah. Well, folks, thanks so much for listening this week. We greatly appreciate it. As we talked about earlier in the show, we do answer emails. Even if we don't talk about them all the time on the show, we appreciate you guys reaching out to us. We will talk about them from time to time on the show. You can always email us at our Gmail account. We're drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. You can interact with us on Facebook, facebook.com/drummersweeklygroovecast. And you can tweet us as well. For the folk who likes 140 characters or less, twitter.com/DWGroovecast. Now, I will be remiss, John, if I don't throw out that we need more reviews on our iTunes page.
That would be awesome.
We had a little burst of, I don't know, several that came in at one time, and I guess it was because of me and you begging, you know, to have it. So here we are again. We're being vulnerable, and we're begging once again. For you folks who pull the show down off iTunes, just please take 30 seconds the next time you log into iTunes. Go to our page. Leave us a quick review. We would be forever grateful for your patronage.
Much appreciated. Go do that Wednesday night gig you've been avoiding. Go do it.
I do a Wednesday night gig.
Well, I know you do. I'm not talking to you.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking to our listeners, the people that I'm trying to reach. You don't listen to anything I say. Why would I even? I'm not talking to you. I'm talking at you.
Duly noted.
No, do it, man. Go get out of your comfort zone or whatever it is that's holding you up. It might lead to some awesome stuff.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to say that it will, even if that awesome stuff is simply leaving the gig or leaving the jam sessions feeling like $1 million about yourself because you did get out of that zone.
Right on.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Every Monday, brand new show. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play Podcast, Stitcher, Podbean, all your favorite podcast apps. Subscribe to us today. We got a good surprise coming up for you in a couple weeks. Hint, hint, we're going on the road, John.
Yes, sir. I love it.
All right. Until next Monday, we will see you then.
Goodbye.
Bye.